Hello and welcome to the 100th... Fuck's sake, don't laugh at me, Sam.
What a start.
What a start.
Hello and welcome to the 100th podcast. The voice you just heard there is not my regular co-host, Ed Farrer. That is, in fact, the voice of Sam Hain of Warwickshire and now the Welsh Fire. Sam Hain is being very rude because he is laughing at my very professional attempts to introduce a podcast and he won't let me do it. Sam, explain yourself.
Oh, no, we're just saying off camera, like, just treat it like a chat in the bar, and as soon as we press record, you can't even get the intro. Oh, it's a hell of a start, but no, happy to be here, happy to chat for the next half an hour, you know, whatever it takes, happy to be on.
Well, mate, I really appreciate your time. I don't appreciate you ruining my professional intro, but I do appreciate your presence.
Oh, God, what a start. I hopefully it's all good to come.
Well, it can only get better from here.
Can't promise, but we'll see. We'll see.
Well, Sam, welcome to the Welsh Fire. You're with Manchester Originals last season at 100. Only played the one game, moved in the off-season. Yeah. How are you feeling about linking up with the Fire?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. After last season, I didn't expect anything of it. Like, you're right, I played one game for Manchester. Disappointingly, we had a strong team, and it was quite tough to actually break into it. So to get the call from, you know, my agent saying Welsh Fire have picked you up, it was something I wasn't quite expecting. I think, you know, for the first couple of years, you know, I thought I was going to get picked. I had a chance, and then I didn't get picked. And then, you know, to be honest, quite brutal and honest with you, my ego took a hit. So like going into this year, I would just sort of try to downplay it all. Because I knew if I didn't, I had an opportunity in the Blast to potentially get a wild card pick. So, no, very thrilled to be down there. I obviously know a few of the boys already playing against them and et cetera. And I've already been on a couple of Lions tours and all that with a few of them. So it's quite a good squad. But more importantly, it's going to be cool to spend a bit of time with a few of the lads who aren't at Warwickshire and see how they go about their business.
You mentioned your ego taking a bit of a battering earlier on. You didn't get picked up in that first draft. Can you try and somehow, I know it was a few years ago now, but can you try and somehow summarise what it must have been like as a professional cricketer to have been aware of that draft process? Because as far as I'm concerned, it's obviously just like, you know, a bloke who's not in the game. The only thing I can think of to compare it to is playground football when you're waiting for your mates to pick you on your team. I mean, I can't possibly imagine what it must have felt like for you in that situation.
Yeah, easy. Like I don't know if it was my ego, but I guess it was a new competition and it was something that, you know what it's like, dressing room chat, like there's 100 coming in and then you look at obviously the names that are entering, and all of a sudden what one of my tendencies to do is I build things up in my head. So I built it up all the way up until the draft. And then, you know, I still remember like the draft happening. And I was actually at the movies watching a movie, and I kept texting my agent saying anything like, is it, have I been picked, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't get picked. And then I just remember like being so flattened down because I really wanted to be involved in this new competition. And obviously when I hadn't got the call or anything like that, I just remember it really, really deflated me. And probably my own wrongdoing was building up so much in my head. And when obviously it didn't transpire and I didn't get picked, that, you know, properly, you know, hurt, it properly took a blow to me. So, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and I've obviously learned a lot about myself and improved certain areas of my game since then. So obviously going into this year, I feel like I'm more than ready. Obviously, there's no guarantees on selection, so we. Nothing to expect. So I might play, but all I know is that, you know, I'm raring to, and I feel like my game's in the best possible place to be able to do well. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Absolutely. I mean, you are coming in this comp on the back of a really good run of form. Obviously, the Blast campaign with Birmingham Bears didn't end the way you wanted it to as a team, but on a personal level, your campaign must have been really satisfying for you. I mean, you know, looking at the stats now, because I'm a nerd, 388 runs, average of 43, strike rate of 161. That is very impressive stuff. I feel like you must be, like you say, in a very good place right now.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think for the last couple of years, or probably for the last 12 months, probably have to do a little bit of soul searching, in the sense that, you know, I've probably talked more with the analysts than I have done in a while about where I'm, you know, the strengths and obviously my weaknesses and trying to improve those weaknesses. Like, I've always looked at on the analytical side of, you know, what's my strike rate and what's my average. But I feel like, without going too in depth, I think more T20 cricket now, average isn't a thing. It's all about strike rate, you know, against different bowlers, what they are in the power play, in the middle and at the death. So I've definitely probably taken ownership of my own game on a T20 front, a white ball front over the last 12 months. You know, I you are right. Like, I personally, and probably collectively as a team, we probably didn't finish the way we wanted to. You know, I remember going off, you know, getting off to quite a strong start, and then it's always tough to maintain during a 14 game campaign. But, you know, that aside, you know, something I wanted to tick off was to get a T20/100. I was lucky enough to get one against Notts. And, you know, 2 years ago, if you told me that I could do it, I probably wouldn't have believed it. So I feel like, you know, the older I get, you know, I had my 27th birthday, you know, on the 16th. So when was that? Like a couple of weeks ago, last week. And I feel like the older I get, the more I know about my game and obviously the areas I want to improve. And I feel like I have improved them. So I just feel like, you know, from a white ball perspective, you know, everything's coming towards hopefully me as a new and improved player. You know, we said off camera, off recording, I've definitely changed a couple people's perspective, yours included. So hopefully I'm doing something right.
No, I think you definitely are. I mean, we were saying earlier. Cheers, mate. Yeah, you really have thrown me under the bus. I will own up here. You know, I mean, you know, and to be fair, if you listen back to some podcasts that we've done about a year or two ago, you know, yeah, I will probably be on record somewhere as saying that, you know, Sam Hain, he's improved. I don't know if he's there yet. In all honesty, I probably said that on record, but I've completely changed my mind. And I'm not just saying that because you're right in front of me now talking to me.
Yeah, and to be frank, like, I don't think I'm there yet. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I can be quite honest. I don't think my, you know, I'm at a stage now where I'm trying to change people's perspective of my white ball game. And two, trying to see what my limits are. And then once you see what your limits are, obviously then you work out a game plan to improve. So I think that's where I'm at now. Like, you know, I, by no means do I think I'm a finished product, but, you know, from 2 years ago, have I improved? Yeah. You know, I can say that quite honestly. So as long as I keep trying to improve the areas I'm not so good at, then I feel like it's given me the best possible chance to score runs and, you know, win games of cricket.
Well, I think the transformation is very clear to see, and it's clearly worked for you. I mean, you've obviously had an interesting and quite unique relationship with averages, because there's the whole highest list A average ever thing, which, you know, I won't dwell on too much because I don't want to butt you up any more than I already have, I think.
Which I think is ridiculous, by the way. I just think, I look at that and go, played like 50 games, guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, it's a remarkable thing, but it's probably my own, you know, my, how I've always looked at the game. Like, I've always looked at, you know, what I have, like, from what I average and what's my strike rate. But so it's taken me a little bit of time to get used to the fact that, nowadays, now in T20 cricket, you know, strike rate is all that matters. It doesn't matter what your average. So I think for the first time in God knows how long, my strike rate's ticked over 130, which I'm absolutely buzzing about.
Yeah, it has to be fair. I want to mention this actually. I mean, what I think is really interesting is that you've obviously really changed your approach in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Your strike rate has really improved. As you say, it is now over 130 career-wise. But in doing that, you also haven't really dropped your average. I mean, you've always been a really prolific scorer, but not necessarily at the highest rate. But your average is still really high. I mean, this season alone, you know, it's around 40-odd, which is, you know, genuinely in the higher tier of stuff as far as T20 cricket goes. Like, it's way up there. And I think it's really rare to have someone who's able to balance that kind of higher intent with stability of that high average. That is quite a unique position to be in.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. I've got to be honest. I think that, you know, it's a balance in that. It's definitely a balance. I've got to realise what sort of player I am. And you are right. I feel like I can add stability to, you know, a batting lineup. But I also, well, yeah, I know from experience, I don't want to be that player. I want to be quite versatile. you know, because I don't want to be pigeonholed as an anchor type player. But it's definitely a strength of mine. There's no hiding away from that. It's a massive strength. You know, I accumulate well, but I also, what I tried to do is show that I can go earlier. So that just means taking a risk a little bit earlier than I potentially do or would, to give me a little bit of breathing room to then do what I'm very good at, and that's batting through the middle overs to save it for the back end. So, you know, little things like that, I guess I've realised more now than ever. And we're not talking massive changes. We're talking, you know, a couple of risks early on to get your innings going. And it's tough during a 14-game period. Like, I can be honest that now, like, towards the back half, I think I went away, you know, I went a little bit away from that. You know, it's a fine line between being reckless and, you know, taking the right option at the right time. And, you know, I still, you know, after nearly 100-odd T20 games, like, I still struggle with, even though it feels like sometimes I'm playing my first one, trying to get the balance of it all. So, no T20 innings is the same, really. Everything's different. And it's, you know, I guess at times it keeps you on your toes. But I definitely feel that, you know, my game in general is at a very good place.
100%, 100%. I mean, was there any kind of like penny dropping moment for you that wanted you to change your approach to T20 batting, or was it just an accumulation of things over the years?
It was an accumulation of things. It was two things rather. I remember in the COVID year getting left out the one-day squad during the Ireland series. You know, I had a few chats with Farby, Mo Bobat, and then obviously missing the first couple years' 100 drafts. I was sort of, in my own head, I was thinking, well, in my head, I think what am I doing here? Because I feel like my record's pretty good in white ball cricket. And that's not, you know, being cocky or anything like that. In my own head, I back my ability. But for that, you know, not to transpire, I sort of went away and used that to find out what areas I can improve. Hence why, you know, I don't usually do too much with the analyst side of the game. But I guess I found out, you know, my strike rates against different bowlers, you know, spin at the start of power play, middle overs, death, all these little things, and trying to pinpoint, you know, I guess an area which was, you know, quite apparent. So it probably forced me to do some soul searching, which I did. I'd probably say those were probably the two penny drop moments. You know, I think part of me is quite stubborn. So for once I went away from that stubbornness and actually, you know, put my foot forward and went on a little bit of an attack and tried to figure out, actually, I need to take hold here and figure out where I can improve my game. So I did that. So hopefully, hopefully hold me in good stead moving forward.
Well, I don't see why I wouldn't, in honesty. I mean, the transformation has genuinely been really enjoyable to watch. And look, we've spoken about this for a while now, so I want to take a bit of a left turn and ask you a very random question.
Yeah.
I will explain all afterwards, all become clear. But for now, I want to ask you a simple question, Sam. How familiar are you with the Brecon Beacons?
The Brecon Beacons, yes. It's a mountain, isn't it? Can you climb it?
Yes, correct. It's a mountain. Now, you're probably wondering why the hell I'm asking you this. Well, I want to know. Yes, the reason I want to ask you, Sam, about the Brecon Beacons is because last season, Welsh Fire head coach Gary Kirsten had planned to take his Welsh Fire squad on a hike through the Brecon Beacons as part of a team building exercise. But according to Ian Cobain, who we had on the podcast last year and who was with Welsh Fire last year, this idea was very unpopular. It was shot down. It never happened. And they just ended up playing pool. Now, this particular hike through the Brecon Beacons that never happened has taken on quite a cult status on this podcast. I don't know why, but I think we just find it very funny, the idea of a Welsh Fire walking through a mountains. I don't know why I find it funny. I really can't explain it to you, but the idea of Josh Cobb and Gary Kirsten having a nice chat about tea and crumpets in the Brecon Beacons is quite funny. Now, what I want to know, Sam, is if, hypothetically, you link up with the team this summer, you get there, Gary Kirsten says, "Hi, I'm Gary. Nice to meet you. We're going to the Brecon Beacons. Do you want to come?" Are you saying, "Yes, I'm team hike," or are you going down the Ian Cobain route and saying, "No, I'm team no hike"?
Well, there's two things that are deciding factors. One, is it raining? Actually, three. One, is it raining? Two, is there an option to play golf? Like, if there's lads playing golf, climbing a mountain, I don't know what I'd choose. And three, am I hungover? Like, those are three probably deciding factors that are affecting my decision. But no, I don't know. I've done it a few times. I've climbed the Malverns a few times. I've got a little Westie at home. I've got a little Westie, little pup named Sky. So I've taken up to the Malverns. So I don't mind getting out and about. But you got to, if it's windy or blowing a gale or it's absolutely pissing down, I think I got to gently decline that, I think. But if it's cracking flags, beautiful day, I'd happily go up. You know what I mean? As long as it's not an all-day event. And I want to get home for dinner in Love Island. Like, I don't want to be up there stranded. You know what I mean? I'm not on the fence there, but there's a few deciding factors that will ultimately decide for me, I think.
Well, you said a lot of the most stereotypical bloke things I've ever heard there, which is brilliant.
But, is there golf? What's the weather like? And I have a few beers the night before. Like,
you're such a lad. No, what a lad. Yeah.
No, I know. To be fair, it's in Cardiff and I've heard stories about Cardiff. But I think I would go up. Just, I think the weather is the most important thing. If it's, if it's windy or anything like that, I don't want to be walking into 20 mile an hour winds, do I? Like, you're not going anywhere. I'm also scared of heights as well. So we'll see.
Oh, Sam.
Conquer my fears. You know what I mean? Team building and all that.
Well, Gary, if you happen to be listening, you're probably not, but if you are, not the worst answer you could have heard that there is hope for your hike yet.
Oh, I'd be more than keen. No, just, it's not my go-to, say. It's not my go-to. You know what I mean? I know Celtic Manor's in Wales somewhere, and it's a lovely golf course. Been lucky enough to play it a few times, and, that I'm sure the boys would love that as a team event instead, but we'll wait and see.
Well, it's interesting, Sam, that you would mention knowing a little bit about Wales and Cardiff, because this next section of the show is all about Wales and particularly Cardiff. Now, you are the second new Welsh Fire signing you've had on the show this year after Alex Hartley.
Yeah.
And what we've been doing is giving the new recruits a little 5-question quiz about Cardiff. Now, I will warn you in advance, Sam, there is a very heavy amount of pressure on you here, because all you need is to get one of these 5 questions correct and you will be top of the leaderboard, because Alex Hartley got 0 correct.
Just one, right? What are these questions, and this could be tricky. This could go down like an absolute shit sandwich if I don't get one right.
Well, no pressure, Sam. Let's get this quiz started. Question number one of the Sam Hain Cardiff quiz: what is the nickname of Cardiff City FC?
Oh my god. So you've already started me. I don't even like football. Right, this shows how much I like football. We had to do... I don't know. I'm going to tell you... first of all, I don't know. But we had to do... I remember doing this thing where we had to ask, like, for, like, media day at Warwickshire 1 year, like, quick questions, quick fire. And like, they asked you, what's your favourite colour? What's your favourite song? And, like, one of the questions was, like, what's your favourite football team? And I don't watch football. I ain't got a clue. But I know my dad supports Everton. So there I'm thinking, right, I'm ready. I'm like 19, 20. So it's a few years ago now. And they go, right, what's your favourite song, so-and-so? What's your favourite colour? You know, where do you like, what's your favourite restaurant? And it comes to your question, what's your favourite football team? And I go, quick, Everton United. And it's not Everton United. It's just Everton. And I'm there going, and then I can't really know why everyone's laughing at me with their hands like this going, oh, my God, this is it. Everton fucking United, it's no fucking much thing. And it didn't even clock. So if I'm saying Everton United is my favourite football team, mate, I ain't got a clue what Cardiff City is. I can't even tell you if they're in the Prem, Championship, Division 1. I just don't know. I just don't know. I don't even know who the manager is. Wow, we're off to a good start there. I reckon that was the easiest one as well.
I don't know. It might not be. We'll see. But the answer is the Bluebirds.
Oh, mate, not a chance. Not a chance. We'd never have got that. Football knowledge in me is an absolute no-go. Like, nada. I've been to West Brom play a few times, but apart from that, mate, like, I ain't got a clue.
Fair enough. Okay, then question two. A reminder, you only need to get one of these correct to be top of the leaderboard. Admittedly, I've only two names, but still, as far as I'm concerned, it's a big honour. Anyway, then, question two. Which of these pop stars is not from Cardiff? Tom Jones, Shirley Bassey and Shaken Stevens?
Well, I know Tom Jones is from Wales. I know that for a fact. I don't know who Shaken Stevens is, but I feel like they're big in the 80s or 90s. I haven't heard of them. And who's Shirley Bassey?
Shirley Bassey. She did like some of the James Bond theme. Diamonds Are Forever. I think he did that one.
Bro, I've got 50-50 here, haven't I? 50-50. I'm going to go... Shirley sounds like a Welsh name, doesn't it? Nah. Shaken Bacons. I'm going to go Shirley Bassett's from... Bassey, sorry. I can't even say her name. Shirley Bassey. She's not from Wales.
I mean, she is from Wales, but she's not from Cardiff, which means technically you got it correct.
fucking hell. Wow, I've just completely won that question. Sorry, yeah, I've got that right, haven't I? I've got one on the leaderboard.
You have got it right. You are number one on the leaderboard.
Mate, who is Shaken Bacons? Shaken Beacons.
Shaken Bacons. Where are they? He's called Shaken Stevens.
Shaken
Stevens, not Shaken Bacon.
Shaken Bacon.
Good. Shaken Stevens is. You will know Shaken Stevens' biggest hit. He did Merry Christmas, Everyone.
I thought they had a Christmas song. We actually talked.
Of course, you did.
Yeah, we actually talked.
Of course, you did, mate. You thought it was called Shaken Bacon.
No. Just because I remember being in the slips during the week, and I was like, "We're just pacing there, and we're bored, and I don't know how we got into Christmas songs." And Michael Burgess actually said his favorite song was from Shaken Stevens, whatever they're called. Sorry, Shaken. Yeah. So that's what struck my mind. Didn't I got no idea where they're from, but that's where I heard that name, which makes it worse that I can't even pronounce it.
Somehow you have got that one right, and I don't particularly like the fact that you are now top of the leaderboard. I feel upset. I have to give it to you, but
good on you, Shirley.
I do have to give it to you. Shirley Bassey is from Tiger Bay, not Cardiff.
Ah, no idea where that is. No idea.
Me neither. All right, three more questions. Let's see if you can somehow fluke your way to a bigger lead. Question three: how many times has the Cardiff Millennium Centre won the Lou of the Year awards?
What? The Cardiff.
Oh, mate, is a thing, to be fair.
The Cardiff Millennium Centre has won the what?
The Lou of the Year awards, as in the toilet awards.
The Lou of the Year, mate. Well, it's either going to be quite a few. It's going to be something like it's never won it. I can meet in the middle here. How many years the award's been going for?
Do I look like a man who knows how many years the Lou of the Year award has been going on for? If you say yes, I'll be quite upset, to be honest.
I don't know. I'm going to say, oh, mate, I ain't got a clue. Yeah. I'm going to say it's never won it, ever. It doesn't even make the final.
Well, apparently it's not a bad toilet because it has won twice.
Twice? I was close. I was thinking it's either won it none or it's won it every year for the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years, how long it's been going for. So two's a bit of a nothing answer, isn't it, really? You know what I mean?
It is a bit, but you know, if you're ever in town and you do fancy a Waz in an award-winning bog, then now is your chance.
Hey, Gary, can we just make a quick detour? I just want to check out the best of Louis. Please.
Go en route to the Brecon Beacon.
Mr. Kirsten, please, can we just go check out this? This would be a good team bonding event.
Please call him Mr. Kirsten, please. Okay.
Oh, God. Right, question, was it question four?
Question four now. It's a true or false one. You got a 50% chance of getting this one correct.
Perfect.
On average, Cardiff has more hours of sunlight per day than Milan.
Cardiff has more hours of sunlight than Milan. On average. Well, I'm going to say... I'm going to say false.
Not true. You were so close, you had it. You were going to say it. It's true.
It's true, isn't it?
It is true, yeah.
What a random question. Why Milan? Why not Paris? Why not Geneva?
Sam, I'm not going to lie to you, mate. I wrote this quiz about half an hour before we logged on.
Right,
I found a website of cool facts about Cardiff. You see, when we did it before with Alex Hartley, Ed, my co-host, is usually on these with me. He knows Wales quite well. His girlfriend is from Cardiff, so he knows his stuff really well. And I don't. I'm just a bloke from, I'm in Nottingham right now. So what do I know about Cardiff? Nothing.
Where, Ed, Google with my friend. Is Ed too busy to have a chat, is he? Doesn't want to talk to me. I see how it is.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't like you.
That's fair. I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
Oh dear. Right. All right. One more of these questions. One more of these questions.
Yeah.
And if you've looked remotely closely at your new Welsh Fire shirt, you will know the answer to this because it is on there somewhere. Do you know what the Welsh translation of Welsh Fire is?
Yeah, I can picture it now. But what is the translation of what? Welsh Fire?
Yes, you're wearing it in a lovely promo photo you took. You look magnificent in it.
Yeah, I was a bit tight, that shirt. I mustn't lie. Had to. I can't even duck on Twitter, can I? And just zoom in on that photo.
No, you can't. That's cheating. This competition is the integrity is very important.
I know, but this reminds me at school of like writing the answers on my legs for math, and then pulling my shorts up to read. Right, no, I to be honest with you, can we do this quiz again after the month away with the Welsh fan? I guarantee you I will get everyone right, especially this one. But at this present time, I ain't got a clue. But I am hoping to learn a bit of Welsh. What is the answer? Well, once you tell me, it will never leave my mind.
I could get this pronunciation wrong, but it's Tan Cumbre.
Tan Cumbre. Oh, man, I can barely speak English sometimes, so I might forget that after this.
Sam, 1 out of 5 in the quiz there, which doesn't sound great, but you are currently top of our leaderboard. You do move ahead of Alex Hartley 1 point.
To be fair, you asked me 5 questions about Birmingham, I'd probably still get 0-1, to be honest with you. I'm happy with 1. We'll take 1. To be fair, I don't even think you probably should have given me that, but we'll take it.
I mean, you technically get it right. I kind of resent giving it to you, but I also want someone to get a question right at some point on this stupid quiz.
I'm going to have to Google Shirley Bassey after this, see what she looks like. But anyway, no, happy with 1. I'll take it.
Onwards and upwards.
After the 100, ask me again, I'll probably still get 1.
Yeah, maybe come back none. Come back on the show. We'll do it again. We'll see how far your knowledge has improved.
Right.
Yes. I think it's time for something a bit more serious now after that stupid quiz.
I'll get my serious head on now.
Yeah, okay. Now, when I think of serious topics, there's only one thing that comes to mind. Your haircut.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. No? It's terrible. It's so bad. But... I call it, to be fair, I've had a few comments about it. I'm like, what's going on with your hair? I'm like, mate, I don't even know anymore. Like, I sort of got it in lockdown. I made like a comment around the dressing room. Like, this is when the barbers and stuff are closed. Like, everything's clear. Everyone's got locks like yours. Everything's long. And I go, you know what, lads? I'm just going to get a mullet. And, you know, this was a few years ago now. And everyone's just like, no, you won't, Haney. Like, you're chatting shit. Like, you're not going to get one. I was like, you know what? I'll get one. And it took me a good few barbers to like find, because they all did it wrong. Like, in theory, it sounds easy, but to get it right, you know, it's quite tough. And I remember the first two, like, they absolutely butchered me when they got too high up on the side. Like, they just made it look terrible. But then I went to this one place. I'm like, mate, can you just fix this? Like, I know it's bad, but can you just sort of like make it look all right? And it finished. I was like, wowzers, this looks unbelievable. Like, I think it looks unbelievable to everyone. Like, my missus hates it. She absolutely hates it. Like, we had a few weddings that we went to in October, and I probably left it a little bit long. And she's saying, I'm like turning to the side, like trying to flare it out. And she's getting angry at me. Like, no, these are nice furs. Like, look straight on so no one can see that the disastrous thing you're at the back of your head. I'm like, nah, like, it's, I guess it's part of me now. But cricket is weird. Like, as soon as I go through a little, you know, rough patch, like, the first thing that's going to be coming off is this mullet. Like, clean reset, mullet will be gone. But for now, like, it's staying. Like, this quarter-life crisis haircut is staying for the time being. But, you know, who knows when I'm going to get rid of it. who knows? You know, to be fair, there's a few flying around the ground in there or around the county circuit. One of our younger lads, Ethan Brooks, has one of the flarest, like he's got skin fade all the way up. And it, oh my God, it makes mine look like nothing. So I actually rate it. To be fair, my dad's, you know, my dad's 60 odd now and he's bald. So at some stage, I'm probably going to lose my hair. So might as well do a few little crafty things with it while I can. But hey, we'll keep it for the time being. It divides opinion, though. Definitely divides opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
some like it, some hate it.
Well, it's better to divide opinion than just be boring and not have an opinion on you. Do you know what I mean? I mean, exactly. It's funny because you mentioned, it's true, there's a lot of monitor out there right now. And I feel like you might have been a trendsetter about knowing it because you were the first one I've ever seen.
No. Definitely not. Nah, well, every time I get my hair cut, I go home, like, Soph, my mum's name's Soph, I go, Soph, I've got rid of the mullet. And the pure jubilation on her face as she thinks I've done it. And I turn to the side and it's still there. And she's like, oh my God, get rid of it. But no, to be fair, it's just, who knows? Like at 27, I've still got a mullet. Like in some ways it's not really good, is it? So we'll wait and see. I don't know how long I'll keep it for, but for the time being, it's definitely staying. I'd love to get it up real long, but unfortunately, I don't think I've got the DNA for that. So we'll see. But at the moment, I'm enjoying it.
As you should be. I mean, I feel like you're the best person to ask this question. Now, you can't see this, of course, because you're listening. But if you do happen to know me in real life, I have a long, flowing amount of hair, like a lot of hair, it's like nipple length hair. It's very John Lennon. Thank you, Sam. Yeah. Brilliant. Great, good one. But, you know, I've gone through a transitional period of my life recently. I moved up from London to Nottingham. I've started a new job. I'm in a new house. There's a lot of change happening in my world. And these locks have been with me for a while now. And, you know, the odd thought comes to mind, maybe it's time for me to move on with my locks. So what I'm saying, Sam, is should I get a mullet?
Well, to be fair, I actually reckon it's easier. Maybe if you just get the sides down and just leave that lusciousness at the back. Like,
oh my God.
Who knows? It'd add a different dimension to it. You know what I mean?
It would change up my vibe considerably.
The listeners can't see, but you've definitely got the length there. It is long. Mate, it could suit you.
The thing is, could is dangerous. Say, like,
hair can grow back. You know what I mean? That's what I say to my missus. And I'm like, Soph, I don't tell you what to do with your hair. Like, why should you tell me what to do with mine? This is what I mean. But you can't win. So all I'm going to say is, why not? You know what I mean? Why not? But, you know, the trick is to find the right barber because I had about 3 or 4 before I found the right one because they kept butchering it.
Well, the thing is, I only trust one guy. I'm in Nottingham now, but my guy back in East London, I will be making trips to him to sort my hair out. So if I am going to get a mullet, I will go to him. He will hate me for this for life. He will probably refuse to do it because he has nurtured these lovely luscious locks for years.
You're a loyal customer. I'm not as loyal. I am now, but it took me a while. But mate, no, go for it. Why not? You know what I mean? What have you got to lose? It's hair at the end of the day. That's what I say to Soph. I go, Soph, it's just hair at the end of the day. She's like, no, it looks dreadful. It looks scraggly. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Right. In that case, because you hate it, I'm going to keep it even more.
The thing is, though, you say, what do I have to lose? And I think I have a lot to lose by getting it wrong because, you know, this hair, this beautiful hair takes a lot of time and energy to grow and maintain. And
yeah, well, you definitely shampoo and condition that. Definitely.
Yeah, I do. Thank you. I'm glad you noticed. I'm glad you've been paying attention. But I think, you know, one of the things that I have, I mean, you probably can't really see because you can see the top half of me, but like I wear a lot of like 70s style clothes. You know, I like a big baggy cord. I like a flare. There is the concern that the mullet doesn't really fit that vibe, but you only live once, don't you?
Exactly. What have you got to lose? Nothing.
A lot of hair.
Well, yeah. Well, there is that. But in the day, it's going to grow back. And that, you know what I mean? It is going to grow back. But unless you just keep growing it and just see how long it gets, that's another option. You know, gone are the days of when you're at school and you're like, my mum was always like, right, short back and sides. And I was just like, right, fine. As soon as I finished school, the first thing I did was grow my hair and then realize it doesn't really grow that long. So then, you know what I mean? So now I'm like, right, we'll have a mullet for a few years and then I probably will go back to short size, because at that point I'll be probably 29 to 30 and I'll be like, right, it's time to like pee a pan. You know what I mean? I've got to grow up someday.
It's funny because when you go on your Crick Info, bio, you look dead prim and proper. You got a nice little side parting. You look so smart.
I know, and then now, I know. Oh no, rough diamond. Well, self-proclaimed rough diamond. No, I know. To be fair, everyone. Well, all my, you know, my. I guess the only one who likes it is me. My mum and dad say, "What are you doing? You're caught by the price." I'm going, "Yeah, I know. I play cricket. What do you think? Well, you know, what do you think is going to happen to me?" But no, I'll probably keep it for. Well, who knows? You know, I could get it off tomorrow. I can't playing, but yeah, it might stay around. It might not. I've thought about shaving my head. I did it once and then realized, wow, this does not suit me. I've got a big head. I'm not sure. That was one option I don't think I'll be taking again. I don't advise that.
I think you should keep it. Keep it for 100, if only because you've got that lovely photo of you now.
Oh, yeah. I will keep it for 100. 100%. 100. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But after that, you know, we've got another wedding into the year. Everyone's getting married. So I'm at that age where all my mates and stuff are getting married. So I reckon it will be time to get it off towards the end of the year. So I'm back to short, back and side parting. Good boy, Haney.
You heard it here first. This is a world exclusive. The mullet's
I guarantee. Yeah, no, we'll get to that in about, you know what? Nah, I'm still keeping it.
Well, I would respect that decision. I respect the decision that the mullet is, at this point, its own character, I think it's fair to say. And this is arguably, I think it's quite funny that at this point, we've probably spent more time talking about hair and cricket. But, you know.
Right. That's the beauty of podcast. You just don't know where they'll go. So
It's brilliant. I mean, we've had our fair share of ones. I'm not naming names. We've had our fair share of players who've come on and, in all honesty, have been quite boring. You know, it's very much like they bat the questions straight back at you. Very polite, but it's just not very interesting. You know, it's a bit like post-match interview after the game where no one really wants to do it. This is not that.
Name and shame them. Who are they? No, I'm joking.
I would do it when we finish recording. If you promise never to dob me in, I would do it.
Oh, God. No, I know what you mean. Well, that's the thing, though. That's probably why I don't, like, end the season play. I'm like, please don't ask me to do an interview, like, because then you sort of have to try and not be serious, but you have to, like, be cliche and, you know, say the right thing. You know, I always go to our media guy at Warwickshire. I'm like, right, what are the questions? Because, you know, you don't want to say the wrong thing. That's why I'm big on it. I just don't want to, like, come across silly or say the wrong thing, because, like, how you're perceived by others, you know, is massive. You know what I mean? You almost want to say the right thing sometimes, which is probably why, like, as I say, in certain interviews, like, I've done certain interviews where I say one thing and I've finished the interview and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm probably going to do it after this podcast. I can't believe I did that. Oh, I can't believe I said that. Yeah. Oh God. Well, I look forward to off air hearing who the boring ones are. And then I'm going to tell them
you,
straight up.
No, I'm not telling you now. I can't.
No, I'm joking.
Well, look, I feel like we should probably talk a little bit about some cricket now, because the hair conversation is all well and good, but I feel like the majority of our regular listeners might be quite confused at this point. And I mean, if you are confused, then you're a square, because this is brilliant. I'm not going to lie. This is great content. This is the most fun I've ever had doing a podcast. But
I'm glad.
But
let's chat some cricket.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'll lead you back into the cricket with a question that Ed, who, as we've established already, doesn't rate you, didn't want to be here today. But in fact, this question proves how much he doesn't rate you, because he wants to know if you would ever consider playing for Hong Kong and getting some international experience under your belt, because, of course, that's where you were born, and I believe you would be eligible.
Yeah. It's a good question. It's actually not one, you know, it's not one I really thought about. Not at this moment in time. This is going to be a shit answer. I'm just going to be on the fence here. But genuinely, like, I haven't thought about it. You know, maybe in a few years, you know, different paths, like your career takes a different direction, you know, certain things happen. Like, you know, growing up in Oz, did I ever think playing county cricket or potentially wanting to play for England was an option? Like, you just don't know what the future holds. So maybe in years to come, like, it's hard to give a, you know, definite answer. I'm especially at this moment in time, my first and foremost want is to score runs for Warwickshire. And hopefully that leads into, you know, higher honours. Test cricket is a pinnacle. I'd love to play test cricket for England, or, you know, any format for England. So that first and foremost is, you know, my want. But have I thought about essentially playing for Hong Kong? I got to be honest, no. But, you know, who knows in the future? Like, I none of us really know what the future holds. I try and stay as much in the present as possible, because I know, without getting too deep, I think too much in the future, it just gives me a little bit of anxiety. I don't really like thinking about it. But I'm not too sure if Ed, I'm sorry if that's the answer you wanted or thought. But, you know, my first and foremost goal at this very moment in time is, I guess, trying to play for England.
That's a good answer. It's a very professional answer from you, Sam. I like that. Your media manager will be very happy with that one. That's great.
Oh, but it's something I get asked a few times, like, why don't you just go play for Hong Kong? Or have you thought about playing for Hong Kong? And I can honestly say, no, I haven't. No, like, I love playing for Warwickshire. Like, Warwickshire is my, you know, my home. It has been home for like 10 years. And, I wouldn't want to go off and play for Hong Kong, especially at this moment in time in a such a condensed season, to be honest with you, like just getting through the season. Yeah, I'm 27 now and I've had a few injuries as well. So I'm like, wow, I've got to start looking after myself. So, even just getting through the season, as arduous as it is sometimes, is, you know, usually my first and foremost goal.
No, you're completely right, I think. And I want to talk about that schedule for a moment, actually. In fact, you have beautifully segued for me there. You've done my job amazingly for me. I'm so grateful for you there. If you could see my notes right now, you have timed it to perfection. You know, like you say, there is a lot of cricket happening right now. The schedule is packed to the rafters. And I feel like as Ben Stokes's retirement from ODI cricket shows, it's taking a toll on players, you know. And I read your interview with Nick Friend in The Cricketer, and it's a brilliant read, by the way. If you haven't seen that already, if you're listening, do go out there and check it out, because it is genuinely a brilliant read. A very different interview to this one with Sam Main, but, you know, nonetheless, a brilliant piece. look, I feel like in that you were brilliant. You know, you're so open about your mental health and agility during this very weird period, you know, post-COVID, where the games are just stacking up like mad. And what I want to say, I guess, is, you know, someone who is sort of tangentially involved in the game but not a part of it as a player or coaching staff or anything like that, is that I think, you know, as a member of cricket media, I guess it's very easy to forget that the people involved in the game are human beings. You know, as Ben Stokes said, you're not cars you can just fill up and set off and off they go. You know, you guys are real people and you've got lives to lead as well as this, and ultimately, like, this is a job, and it's a job that you're being absolutely flogged over. And, you know, I can't really begin to imagine what that's like. You know, my 9-to-5 in my creative design studio in Nottingham is not really compared to that. So I wonder, just for you, how have you been managing this schedule, like, mentally? How challenging has it been for you to find that balance, I guess? I mean, have you found the balance?
I didn't when I first moved over. So I moved over at 16 17, like, it took me, you know, a good few years to find balance. I think I'm only just finding balance now, where, you know, my relationship with the game is at a place now where I'm happy with. You know, at times, you know, at times when I first moved over, in that article, I explained sort of at 16, obviously growing up on the Gold Coast, moving over, shipping everything, you know, to follow a dream, essentially. You know, I left everyone. I left my friends, my family, my support network, you know, mum and dad, you know, especially, you know, my old man who used to take me down to the nets, you know, and feed me balls on the bowling machine. You know, he was my right-hand man, like, take me to games, you know, this and that. And to leave all of that, like, I struggled massively. I can say that quite openly. You know, when it was going well, you know, everything was fine and dandy, but when it wasn't, I sort of felt like I was letting them down. Like, this, you know, I was a burn. I wasn't making them proud. And that was essentially because I was, you know, over here by myself. You know, my own stubbornness probably didn't allow me to go out and seek help or talk to people and be open, you know, with my feelings, thoughts, whatever it is. So I kept a lot of it bottled up. But I kept on going. I get that from my mum. So at the same time, there was a steeliness in me where I was like, you know, I'll make it work. And it wasn't really until the last probably 12 to 18 months that, well, really the start of the year, more so now. I've always sort of done work with sports psychologists, but, you know, really now we employed Kate Green, who works at the club. And, you know, I did a little bit of work. I was in Bangladesh during the franchise tournament over there, and I did a little bit of work with her, and it sort of led on to a continuation of that. And it sort of brought back, I guess, my love for the game and the reason why we play it. And ultimately, you know, that helps with the enjoyment side and your relationship with it. I mean, it was something with me that probably got lost for a few years. And we've all played cricket. We've all watched it. We know how tough it can be at times. Like, it's all good when it's going well. But for me, when it wasn't going so well, it was sort of a double-edged sword. I was sort of going through a rough stage, not knowing why, but also at the same time, you know, being halfway around the world from, you know, a support network to help me through. So it definitely took me a while, I guess, to manage to cope. You know, I feel like I'm at a stage now at 27 that I'm able to deal with most things. But there was certainly a stage now, obviously, you're right, like the season's more busy than ever with 100 different competitions, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember, you know, I mean, being in a place where, like, I don't want to play here. Like, I'm really struggling, but not knowing why. Because, you know, you play when you're at school. You know, you play on a Saturday and Sunday with your friends, and it's, you know, it's fun. But as soon as it turns into a job and your currency is runs or wins or whatever it is, whether we like it or not, it changes a little bit. So I remember in 2014 when I made my debut, I had a great year. And then 2015, I don't know what happened. You know, I just fell off a cliff, I feel. And then, you know, not knowing why or not knowing how to come back from it. So it's really, it's honestly, with the last 12 months or so, is going back as to why I play the game. And it probably just a little bit of self, you know, self-exploration, I think, is more than anything. And I think for anything, it can only help and guide you and aid you when times are tough during cricket. And it gives you a lot of perspective on why you play the game. And when times are tough, it just makes you realize that, you know, cricket's, it's a game at the end of the day, and it's not the be all and end all. Especially during COVID, when you know, I think COVID was massive. Like, it's been, my twin's over at the moment. He's got a one-way ticket. He's just moved over from the Gold Coast, and I haven't seen him for like 3 years, and I haven't seen my, you know, I haven't seen my mum and dad in about 4 years or so. Like, COVID just, I guess, brought everything a little bit closer to home, you know, with everything that happened, with everything gone on. So, like, I feel like now at the stage I'm at, I'm able to deal with, you know, not necessarily the highs of cricket, but definitely the lows of cricket. So I'm not too sure if I've gone off on a bit of a tangent there, but I guess I just tried to summarize essentially what that article with Nick Friend was about. Like, he asked me, this was, you know, if you've had a good start to the year, like, what have you been doing? And I guess the easy answer could have been, you know, I've been working hard on the bowling machine, you know, working on my forward defense, this and that. But I guess I had to be quite open and honest and say, actually, the work I've been doing is, you know, between the ears and upstairs. Cause I think, how I think about the game and my relationship with it is more important than anything else. If you're able to deal with the lows of cricket, so, you know, you stay much more leveled through it all, it can only keep you one grounded, but give you the best possible chance of staying as level as possible, and, you know, hopefully can allow you can go out and be free and do your job at the best of your ability.
You know what, that was one of the most interesting tangents I think I've ever heard. Honestly, I thank you so much for being so honest and open about that. It's so rare to hear a player be this frank, to be honest with you. Like, you don't often hear about this side of the game, and I think it's well worth shining a light on. I think it's important that people understand this about the game. You know, I think it's important that people remember you guys are just people.
Yeah, I don't think, like, 12 months ago would I have probably once said it out loud. Like, I guess a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, at 16, 17, when I moved over, like, I had to deal with a lot of stuff by myself. Like, part of me was, playing here for 6 months and I'd be on the first flight back to Oz, and there was no separation between the two. And it took me a while to actually commit to being over here. And that meant potentially not going home 1 year. So now I'm like, even though I haven't seen mum and dad, you know, for 4 years pretty much, due obviously, you know, I know COVID and all that, you know, has happened, which makes it very, very tough. But that's just the way it is. And you know, that's okay. But I remember the first few years, like, wowzers, there were some tough moments. I just think back to it, some real tough moments where I was just like, you know, why is this happening, or why can't I score now? Why am I? It just drives you around the bend. It really, really does. Because until you've experienced, because I remember at school, I never really experienced any real low points in cricket. And it wasn't until when I moved over and it turned into a job that I properly, you know, you're playing week in, week out, especially after 2014, when a great year, to 2015, when I couldn't buy a run, I think, yeah, I almost didn't know where to turn. To be honest with you, there was probably a little bit of trauma from that experience that I've probably had to terms with now, nearly 6-7 years later, you know. Just, and it's been refreshing. It's refreshing. It's given me a new, not lease of life, but I guess I accept the game for what it is. I don't take it home with me. You know, where in the past I did, like, I don't burden on things. I accept for what they are. You know, I know I'm going to, as a batter, I'm not going to have more bad days than good, and that's okay. As long as I'm working towards as long as I'm walking towards an end goal, yeah, and trying my best to get there, that's all I can ask for.
Well, listen, Sal, I really appreciate you being so honest. It genuinely is fascinating to hear, and thank you for opening up like that. I feel like this is
already... I'm sorry to the listeners that I promised you it didn't intend to go that way. I just probably the same way in the article, I just sort of spoke from the heart a little bit. Like, I just think it's important too, especially with, you know, what Ben Stokes has come out and said recently and months gone by. Like, I think it's important as a cricketer to not that there is a stigma to it anyway, but, you know, it's a tough game. It really, really is. So the more people can be honest about it, you know, the more people talk about it, I guess it makes it easier. And it shows others that, you know, I can relate to that. So probably hence why, even though when I did the article, I was like, nah, no one's going to, you know what I mean? No one's going to read this. Like, why would they want to read that? But, so yeah.
Well, listen, Sam, I feel like this has genuinely been, I'm not just saying this, genuinely one of, in fact, I'm going to say the best interview that we've done, I think. Is that because Ed's not here and it's just me? Very possibly. But I think more...
How many done? Is it like 3 or 4? Because I'm like, there's not great odds.
Oh, no. Like, this is our second year doing this. This is probably like the 15th, 20th or so we've had. We've had plenty of players on. So this is genuinely right up there for me. It's been fantastic. But I do have a little bit of a bone to pick with you, Sam. Just one bone here. And we're going to go right back to the start, which feels like an awfully long time ago. When I was doing the introduction... or trying to do the introduction, you laughed at me, right? I mean, fair play. Okay, maybe I did. But, and this is the big but, Sam, doing what I do, introducing a podcast, especially when you have a guest the other side of you who you haven't really met yet, it's a hard thing to do. And so I want to give you a bit of a taste of your own medicine here. I wouldn't normally do this, but I feel like I'm going to now. I want you to do an outro for this podcast. I want you to summarize the podcast, give a little shout out to, you know, ask people to subscribe, follow, etc.
Is this my job?
Yes.
I thought you were interviewing me.
Well, I was, but, you know, if you want to break up the
rules, I don't think I've ever done an outro. So what do I say? In closing, sayonara.
In closing. Man alive. Okay. I think I should give you a little bit of a script. It's only fair to give you a bit of a heads up. Right. I want you to say, thank you for listening for the 100 podcast. If you enjoy what you just heard, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at podcast100 and subscribe on your chosen platform.
Oh my God. There's no way. I can certainly try.
Or if you want, you can just come up with whatever you think will be appropriate. I don't know. The ball's in your court, Sam.
Am I like talking in third person or like first person?
Do you know what? The choice is yours. You can be as Sam Hain or you can be as generic radio presenter. The choice is yours.
Right. Okay. Right. Let me just give me 1 second.
This is so good.
3, 2, 1. Right, guys. Thank you very much for listening to the 100 podcast with myself, Sam, and Charlie. Don't know how it's been thrown on me to close this one out, but I'll give it a go. Look, first of all, I really enjoyed speaking with you. It's been a lot of fun. If you guys enjoyed listening, please subscribe. I'm sure Charlie will tell you the at on Twitter and all social platforms. So once I throw it back over to him to say, if you go follow them and subscribe, you'll be able to tune in for more podcasts to come. But for me, look, I really enjoyed it. I hope you all did too.
That was very good.
I've nailed that. I've absolutely nailed that.
That was brilliant.
If anything, hey, you've got a new co-host.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. Ed, you've gone. Now this is hosted by Charlie and Sam Hain.
I'll be cheaper.
Well, I feel like at some point we have to officially end this podcast. I'm going to do that right now. Sam, that was brilliant. Thank you so much. By the way, the at that you did mention was at podcast 100. So do follow us there. Tune in for more stuff. I can't promise it's going to be this wild, but hopefully you'll still enjoy what we have to offer. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Sayonara.